Thanks, Mark. And thanks for the opportunity to share some thoughts here. And my interest and thoughts are focused on near-surface processes in soil. Some of that's been addressed by some of the speakers already. I'll start with some drama to get things going and get your thoughts going about large-scale surface processes that are impactful, such as dust storms that happen around the world. And the cause of these events, largely due to wind, but also surface processes and properties, are a major factor. Are we monitoring, are we measuring these properties, and can we do more about that? On the other side of the globe, we have enormous erosion going on in the Les Plateau. The scale of the erosion is pretty significant. Comparing the flows in Yellow and Yangtze River, there's more than an order of magnitude less flow in the Yellow River, and yet the amount of sediment being transported in the Yangtze or in the Yellow River is three times higher, at about 1.6 million tons a year, and this is all being eroded from the surface of soil. A third point to make is the issue of remote sensing that is becoming more and more important for all of us, and in the future will certainly become a significant way in which to get information and make decisions, management decisions around the world. Large-scale irrigation management will certainly take advantage of this, whether from satellite or using drones, which I suspect many of you are starting to use now. The top inch of soil exhibits properties and processes that are really not well understood or easily measured. And the top inch needs improved sensors to advance our understanding and our ability to measure and monitor. And for the most part, if you think about it, the top inch has really been neglected because it's so dynamic. The water content, temperature, everything changes so rapidly there. And it hasn't been really of much interest, considering plant roots are growing much deeper than that generally and taking water. If you look at the satellites just for soil moisture products, by the end of the year, in theory, there will be six satellites focused on giving us information on soil moisture. And we see people using hybrid solutions or algorithms to really downscale what right now is probably at a bigger pixel resolution than is really useful, but using optical methods, they're starting to get better information about moisture content in the soil. At the other end, how do we calibrate our measurements from remote sensing on the ground? A lot of the sensors that we use are really made for sample scales that go well below the top inch of soil. So just to illustrate, if you can see the image here, in the 1.5 gigahertz measurement of dielectric permittivity from backscatter measurements, we get soil moisture information. And there's an issue with sensing depth. It depends on water content, it depends on texture, it depends on electrical conductivity. So the penetration depth is a little bit uncertain. But if you think about moisture sensors measuring 5 centimeters, top 5 centimeters of soil, and you have shallow wetting events, maybe down to a centimeter, the satellite may see quite a bit wetter conditions than what your sensors seeing, and vice versa. If you have wet soil that's evaporating, that evaporation layer moves downward, and there's probably a disparity there between what the sensors see and what the satellites are seeing. So there's a lot of soil properties that should be of interest, and certainly are of interest, depending on what kind of work you're doing. Water content's a big one. Matrix potential, if you can get that, would be of interest. thermal properties, specifically thermal conductivity, diffusivity, and heat capacity, are all of interest for heat transfer in soil. The structure and strength of soil, soil texture, conductivity, and temperature, all these properties are of interest. And processes associated with those properties, water infiltration and evaporation, erosion and saltation, which is associated with dust storms, solute and contaminant transport, heat and energy transport, emissions of greenhouse gases, freeze-thaw processes, electromagnetic emissions that remote sensing is seeing. So all of these properties and processes are largely associated with soil, or soil in the top inch and deeper. So how do we scale down our measurements? We want to measure the top inch or maybe the top few millimeters. Can we scale these down? Would smaller sensors allow us to measure these near surface processes and properties? And do we need smaller sensing volume? Is that a solution? So we've been working at Utah State for a number of years on thermal measurements and trying to improve this. And this is we call it a pentaneedle heat pulse probe. And just to highlight some of the features, it has a 2 millimeter heater in the center, and then you have thermistors in the 1 millimeter needle surrounding that. There's a microcontroller that allows parameter optimization, so it'll actually fit the thermal properties. I'll show that in a minute. There's SCI 12 communication, and if we've made any contribution here, it's probably just the automation and fitting of the thermal properties, because many of you and others have done these kind of measurements for a number of years. The way this works, the center needle is heated for about 8 seconds. So this heat pulse generates a temperature rise in the surrounding thermistors, and you track that over 1 to 2 minutes. Then using an analytical solution that contains parameters, specifically thermal conductivity and thermal diffusivity, as well as heat velocity in the X and Y directions, we basically fit these 4 temperaturized curves, or the data using curves, and estimate the parameters this way. And one other issue that's associated with thermal measurements is the radius from the heater needle out to the temperature sensing needles, and we've also included a calibration routine that can do this automatically. So I'll just show you a couple of examples of what we can do with the pentaneedle heat pulse probe. The first is looking at just thermal property measurements, and in this case it's dairy cow manure. It's just a random choice of media. I happen to be working on this. This is measured under constant temperature conditions in the lab. And then soil heat flux example in a column of sand under constant surface heat input. So in terms of thermal properties, we dried this down. It starts with a porosity of over 80%. And you can see the thermal conductivity, the thermal diffusivity, which has a nonlinear shape, and then the ratio of those two gives you heat capacity of the manure. And using the estimate of the particle density and the bulk density of the manure, we can estimate the soil water content. So we get pretty reasonable estimates of soil water content. And keeping in mind the distance between the heater and the temperature sensing needle is about 6 millimeters. So this is in a relatively small space. Now, the other example, and something I'm, I guess, more interested in, and probably many of you are more interested in, would be looking at soil heat flux in the near surface. So looking at heat flux from the surface downward, and if you look at the traditional soil heat flux plates, they're buried about 8 centimeters below the surface. you're measuring temperature gradients and water content above that. And so you can imagine there's some lag in the temporal signature of the heat flux plates relative to what's going on in the atmosphere. So I think this is a nice example where you're going to see much more immediate results. Now in this case, this is a sand column drying from the surface downward. And so if you look at the figure at the bottom, from 60 to 90 hours, I don't think that's hours, that must be minutes. So 60 to 90 minutes, I think we're drying it during stage one, and all of the energy, most of the energy is being lost at the surface during evaporation. About 90 minutes in, we start to see at between 0 and 6 millimeters the heat flux moving downward as the evaporation layer moves downward in the surface. And you can see that dropping off as you go to subsequent layers, and some of that heat's being stored in the dry layers above. So you start close to 100 watts per square meter, and I think this was 450 watts from a heat lamp at the surface, and going downward to where you kind of level off, and about 30 watts per square meter, getting down to about 20 millimeters, or just 2 centimeters below the surface. So you can see the capabilities of the heat flux measurements using the heat pulse probe. And again, going back to the benefits of this sensor, it's giving you estimates of thermal conductivity, thermal diffusivity, and heat capacity during this measurement process. And that's probably the main advantage of the sensor at this point. So there's a poster by a graduate student of mine, Kasper Mana, at this afternoon, 1442 is the poster number there. So just looking back at the properties and processes with thermal measurements, we can look at obviously the thermal properties of the soil as well as temperature profiles using the sensor. More importantly, we and others have shown that you can get information on water flow in soils. If you can see water flow and track concentrations, you can look at solute transport and heat fluxes and energy transport, as I've shown here. And recently others have shown freeze-thaw processes may be examined using heat flux or heat pulse probes. And if you can estimate water content either through this sensor or independent measurements, obviously that expands the abilities to look at surface processes and properties. So in summary, this top inch is a critical interface, provides regulation and protection and exchange surface. And many of these near surface processes and properties really are in need of improved measurements and monitoring, including soil heat flux and water content and other processes and properties. So I think thermal measurements offer a promising solution for looking at the top inch of soil. Thank you. So I'm not familiar with that. Is that a radioactive measurement?
It is a radioactive source, and that's one of the reasons why our regulations increase. But it's kind of irrational in a sense, because I'm not aware of anyone who's ever damaged from health standpoint. But you really do need to find spatial resolution over a volume of soil that's undisturbed. There's some real advantage in that.
Yeah, and that's looking at the from the top down, or are you looking at a profile?
From a source to a detector that are separate.
Okay, so sampling tubes that provide the measurements.
Right.
Okay.
Brent.
Yeah. Yeah, so it is in the case of manure, does the manure generating heat complicate the measurements of the thermal properties? So we were interested in looking at this because we had some instrumentation issues that we weren't sure where they were coming from. So we looked at thermal properties in sand over a range of temperatures, and There's very little effect or change in thermal properties with temperature from what we measured, and so the fitting of the parameters seemed to be very robust. We didn't see a lot of anomalies there. In the organic material, I'm not sure that that's much different in terms of the thermal properties being temperature dependent. So yes. From the heater outward. Okay, so that's a good question that I don't know if actually the temperature increase in the material is affecting what you'd expect to see in terms of the transport of, from the heater outward to the thermistors. Okay. I think you asked me this before, and I've thought about that for a few years now. Can we cool the central needle and measure temperature decrease? This would be great in ice, of course. Yeah, and I can't think of a way to do that. I've looked at. I'm not sure how you do that with this with a needle. I think so. I thought also the cooling rate. For example, if you flowed cooled water through the needle, I'm not sure the cooling rate is fast enough. So yeah, it's a good question.
Well.
Yeah. So that first needle, if it's exposed to the sun, probably gives you some errors in temperature. And that is a challenge to get the, so we have an extra needle there to get us between the surface and 1.5 millimeters. And it's very challenging. Those temperatures really fluctuate a lot more than the subsurface temperatures. And of course, you guys have shown some corrections for, what are the trends in temperatures going up and down, and we haven't implemented those. So those are some improvements that probably need to be made to make this a better measurement.
So are there any questions for previous speakers in the session? Really quick before we wrap up.
Bruce.
Sensors community. It's time for our business meeting now, so don't go anywhere. If there
CO2 increase, which has gone up from 280 to 400, and has that decreased evaporation around the
transpiration?
Yeah. And I guess, I mean, CO2 will have its biggest effects in dry places like where you are and where I am. And but what happens, of course, is that the leaf area goes up and just sucks up that water. So if you're in a dry place, all the water still ends up going out through evaporation one way or another. But in doing so, it certainly has allowed greening up of the vegetation. So the NDVI has increased in Australia and South Africa and all these other places that are dry, the savanna-like places. So I don't think that the total transpiration will have gone down so much. It's more likely to have gone down in places where there's plenty of water. And so you might expect runoff to have increase in places where there is runoff, but we don't have much runoff in Australia.
Any further questions for the previous speaker? Okay, well, with that, we'll conclude. But real quick, one more thing that I do want to say. He's now sitting in the room when I was acknowledging people beforehand and giving thanks at the start of the session. Keith Bristow wasn't here. He does not have a formal leadership position within ASA at current, at least that's my understanding, but Keith Bristow helped me tremendously to put this session together. So I want to give Keith a hand and all the speakers a hand.